Good morning, Raiderland. We couldn't quite make it back from break, so instead of doing a live show, we've compiled some of the best moments of Good Morning Texas Tech. Listen up in the next hour for some of the greatest and best interviews that we've had over the last semester, and stay tuned to 88.1 KTXT FM, The Raider.
My name is Cupid Valentino, the modern day Cupid, and I just want to say one thing. Happy Valentine's Day.
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech. Today, our theme is Valentine's Day.
Single Awareness Day for me. Thank you, Julie.
So, okay, I don't want to make this sound really negative, because I like Valentine's Day sometimes, but I feel like a lot of people don't have good experiences on Valentine's Day.
I've never had a bad one.
You've never had a bad Valentine's Day?
No, I have broken up with someone on Valentine's Day.
That's so mean.
And that wasn't a bad experience for you?
Well, not for me. I was fine.
Oh, see,
she was the one that did the breaking up. Oh, okay. So the guy was devastated, but...
He's probably listening right now.
No.
Sharpening his knives.
No, he goes to A&M, and that's why we just weren't going to work out.
Okay. Well, we decided it would be entertaining to go around and talk to our fellow students about some of their worst Valentine's Day experiences.
One time, it was my freshman year in high school, and I went up to my boyfriend of the time and told him it wasn't working in front of everybody that he was eating with at the lunch table, and he started crying, and then in the next class period, I got a carnation that he had bought 2 days before.
When I was in third grade, I gave my third grade teacher a love note, and then his wife found it, and then she came to the school and had a very stern talking to with me because she didn't know a third grader could be that sensual.
On Valentine's Day, I went to Walmart and was hitting balloons around and accidentally knocked the guy in the head, and I felt better because I didn't have a Valentine. It made me really happy.
My most awkward Valentine's Day moment would have to be when I was 12 years old. We had our first Valentine's Day dance. I was super excited because I got asked by a guy that I thought I liked, and we're all having a good time with the dance, and about an hour into it, slow dance came on. Instead of having the guts to go up and slow dance with him, I actually ran away and hid in the bathroom until the dance was over because I was too nervous to actually slow dance with him.
My most awkward Valentine's Day moment was my junior year in high school. We all had to exchange gifts, and we all had to stand in front of each other. All the dudes and the girls had to stand in front of each other and exchange gifts. And I exchanged gifts with my girlfriend, and when she gave me her gift, there was a girl standing directly behind me and snatched the gift out of my hand and threw it on the floor and crushed it and then caused a commotion and then, like, gave me her gift. And my girlfriend got mad, and they began to argue, and I just, you know, smoothly walked out.
Good, thank you. That was... Okay, smoothly walked out.
I don't know about you listeners, but we were giggling up the whole listening to that.
Those are some of the best stories because you delve so far back into people's history.
I feel bad. I mean, I can sympathize with the hiding in the bathroom for the dance. I've done that once,
Kira.
But that was because I was asked to dance and I did not want to dance and I didn't know how to politely say no thank you.
So you turned around and ran?
I didn't run so much as just said, oh, can you excuse me? And never came back. Like, I just...
And y'all gave me whatever for breaking up with someone on Valentine's Day. At least I didn't run away from him.
I feel bad for the girl that broke up with her boy. It was the first one where she broke up with her boyfriend at lunch, and then she gets a carnation. I mean, that's just...
I would feel, like,
awkward.
That's kind of... I don't know.
What's been your worst Valentine's Day experience?
Honestly, getting ready for the show and everything, I was trying to think about what my worst Valentine's Day experience was, and I don't really remember a bad one. I mean, there was ones where you spent it by yourself or you didn't have a significant other to spend it with.
For the last 3 years, so thank you.
But,
okay, keep going.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't. I've spent Valentine's Days alone before, and I think it's different for a guy.
Did you listen to Love Hurts and dance around in your living room?
Yes, I cried and watched Twilight or The Notebook.
No, that makes me feel better.
Ate a whole bowl of ice cream. You know,
I have a miserable one. Me
Let's
and my
me and my ex-boyfriend were on break, and he brought me and my best friend flowers and chocolate and took both of us out to go eat and took us both out to go play pool.
Was he trying to ask your best friend out?
I don't
but
know.
Not have you be upset about it?
I don't know. That's why I don't talk to him anymore.
That's just really fair awkward. Yeah. Do you like my best friend and me? Because this That's is where not you're going to draw the line. Or, Josh, what are your thoughts on that? Would you ever do that? Would you ever take out your ex-girlfriend and her best friend on Valentine's Day at the same time?
Not unless I wanted a death wish. I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't seem... I think there are other motives there besides...
it's also the first time and the last time I've ever gotten flowers.
Oh, wow. You've never bought them for yourself?
No.
That's not sad. Okay?
Yes, it is.
I want everyone to quit saying that because I've done that for myself. It makes me feel better to see something pretty. And that's not.
Look in the mirror, Kiara.
Oh, thanks.
Here's the thing,
Julie,
about.
I'm going to get you flowers tomorrow. I think really nice. You need some sunshine in your day.
Here's the thing about Valentine's Day, and I think this is from a guy's perspective. For us, it's just another day where we have to go spend $50 on flowers. You know, I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't.
No, you don't have to buy.
Where do guys get their Valentine's Day? Where do they get their Valentine's Day? Because guys are not the main target audience for Valentine's Day.
Guys, girls, let us know. Tweet us on Twitter and let us know what you think and what you would want. And guys, what do you get on the cheap? Because I've gotten cheap gifts before and they're so cute. Like, if you make cookies for a girl, that's just pretty adorable.
That is sweet.
It's really adorable. Even
Unless
if your you mom
cook.
Helps you and it's like a two-people process.
No.
It's
if
cute.
Your mom helps you, you are pathetic. How old are you? I think not. And we are not in kindergarten anymore.
If my boyfriend's
with my
mom
Valentine's,
helped
okay?
him make cookies and then they mailed it to me, I'd be like, are you...
Do I send Valentine's to my mom? I used to get her an orchid.
That's really sweet. Aww. Those are really pretty flowers.
They are. And they're super expensive, and she always killed them. I don't understand.
I can't keep anything alive, so I can feel her pain.
not relationships. Is that why your Valentine's Day?
Wow.
Ouch. I meant like a bamboo plant that you don't even have to water.
You
I can't keep that alive.
Just stick it in the water. It's okay.
My life is a joke right now.
It's okay.
Now.
The worst, this was kind of a Valentine's, kind of not, is the one date that I went on. And I thought it went really well. But then I never heard from him again. And 3 months later, he was engaged. So... That was kind of uncomfortable.
That always, you know, that's always interesting. After you break up with somebody or they break up with you and then like 4 months later they're engaged to someone else and you're like, that's interesting on the timing. Yeah. All right.
You weren't dating them when you went on that.
No, you weren't seeing them while you were seeing me, right?
If y'all have a hilarious Valentine's Day story, please let us know on our Facebook or on Twitter at the Raider 881. We want to hear about it. We want to laugh with you, not at you. So hit us up and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Here's a package from one of our students made for GMTTU. Enjoy.
The tornado warning remains in effect for Lubbock, Western Crosby, Floyd, and Southern Hale counties until 10 p.m. tonight.
We're getting one steady electricity storm. It's just lighting this. There's one on that and just keeping the whole sky lit up.
You advise the police department in Ottawa to sound the warning sirens for a possible tornado.
Cloud southeast just dropped two hooks a minute ago.
Sir Lubbock, we've been hit.
There's some people trapped in the house upstairs.
A possible tornado was indicated by radar.
Raining real heavy out of 289.
And a funnel cloud has been observed in this same area.
Lubbock Road out here is blocked with trailer houses and everything else.
May 11th, 1970, a date that many Lubbock residents still recall to this day. During the evening of May 11th, around 9:30, a quickly developing severe thunderstorm that formed just south of the city moved north and produced a destructive tornado that touched down just south and east of Texas Tech's campus. The tornado then moved north and east, leaving a path of death and destruction throughout downtown before eventually dissipating near Lubbock's Preston Smith International Airport. In its wake, 26 people lay dead, and over $100 million worth of damage lay strewn throughout the city's core. But in true Red Raider fashion, a tragedy was turned into something positive. Because of this deadly natural disaster, Texas Tech's Wind Science and Engineering Research Center and Department was founded. Dr. Richard Peterson, Emeritus Professor of Tech's Wind Science Program, joins us with more on the early years of the program and just how the tornado of May 11th, 1970 influenced the development of this program.
I came here in the fall of 73. We moved into what was the BA Tower in 76. What happened was that on May 11th, 1970, there was this devastating tornado across the north side central area of Lubbock. It was the largest dollar damaging tornado up until that time in U.S. history. The foremost tornado researcher for decades was Ted Pagetit, and he flew down here and did a survey and wrote a short article, and so that gave a lot of prominence to it. And actually some analyses of the damage swaths in the tornado were instrumental in him coming up with the idea that big tornadoes have smaller embedded tornadoes. He called them suction vortices. Shortly after that, too, he came up with the damage scale, so-called Fujita scale, which a few years ago was modified or enhanced mostly under the stimulus of Texas Tech structural engineers here.
Millions of dollars in research grants, several notable and now very successful graduates, and a history full of accomplishments later, Texas Tech now has a program to be exceedingly proud of. For Good Morning Texas Tech, I'm Cutter Martin.
You're listening to the best of Good Morning Texas Tech right here on the Raider 88.1.
The names of the U.S. residents who then became the presidents and got a view from the White House flew up Pennsylvania Avenue. George Washington was the first, you see. He walked up the cherry tree.
Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech, joined by Dr. Dennis Patterson. You can join us on Twitter at TheRaider881 or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheRaider881. We're speaking about the State of the Union speech this past week, and it was one of those speeches by President Barack Obama getting into his second term, the make it or break it term, it seems, for presidents in past years, because it's usually they've had a good first term, second term not so well, or it's vice versa. They've had kind of a rough first term, a good second term. In your thoughts from President Obama's speech on Tuesday night, what were your initial reactions to it, what he said? Was there anything that stuck out to you?
Well, he named several things that are going to be the focus of this administration. If you go back to his first speech, healthcare played an important role. And sure enough, you know, since Teddy Roosevelt first tried to introduce universal healthcare in America, that was the main issue in the first administration. And it got passed. This administration, there are going to be several things that he's focused on. There's no doubt about it. He made them very, very, very clear in that State of the Union speech.
We've got some clips from the State of the Union. Go ahead and play, DG, the education, immigration, and gun laws clips.
Every dollar we invest in high-quality early childhood education can save more than $7 later on by boosting graduation rates, reducing teen pregnancy, even reducing violent crime. In states that make it a priority to educate our youngest children, like Georgia or Oklahoma, studies show students grow up more likely to read and do math at grade level, graduate high school, hold a job, form more stable families of their own. We know this works. So let's do what works and make sure none of our children start the race of life already behind. Let's give our kids that chance. Real reform means stronger border security, and we can build on the progress my administration's already made, putting more boots on the southern border than at any time in our history, and reducing illegal crossings to their lowest levels in 40 years. Real reform means establishing a responsible pathway to earned citizenship, a path that includes passing a background check, paying taxes and a meaningful penalty, learning English, and going to the back of the line behind the folks trying to come here legally. And real reform means fixing the legal immigration system, to cut waiting periods and attract the highly skilled entrepreneurs and engineers that will help create jobs and grow our economy. IDEA's parents, Nate and Cleo, are in this chamber tonight, along with more than two dozen Americans whose lives have been torn apart by gun violence. They deserve a vote. They deserve a vote. Gabby Giffords deserves a vote. The families of Newtown deserve a vote. The families of Aurora deserve a vote. The families of Oak Creek and Tucson and Blacksburg and the countless other communities ripped open by gun violence, they deserve a simple vote.
Alrighty, those were some clips from Obama's speech. I have to say, I was kind of surprised by what he said about immigration, because that goes along with kind of what people against him want, it sounds like to me.
Well, understand that it was George W. Bush who really initiated, I mean, the first major immigration reform came from Reagan, mm-hmm. okay, Republican president. George W. Bush introduced a very similar kind of program, but only to be opposed by some very conservative members of his own party. Mm-hmm. Now, this past election, and I'm not trying to be cynical, not to say this, but in election, one group that was very supportive of the president was Hispanic Americans. Mm-hmm. They're going to expect this. And remember this. Presidents always speak to the audiences and the issues that got them elected. Mm-hmm. This is what Absolutely. All elected officials do. So You're going to work on immigration. Absolutely, yes, because that is a group that his on-the-ground campaign team helped mobilize. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important.
Yes, it is. That is, I'm living in Texas and growing up in Texas, it's mm-hmm. been really interesting to see how immigrants have been integrated into the voting process. And I worked in news for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And just in those 2 years of when Obama was claiming office mm-hmm. and everything, it was really interesting to see how campaign organizers were motivated to go after these immigrants and the mm-hmm. Hispanic Americans, mm-hmm. because they were kind of just being left alone. There wasn't really as much targeted towards them.
No, and this is a group that demographically is going to play very, very and increasingly important roles in the upcoming elections.
I agree.
And going on education, I thought it was odd how he mentioned teen pregnancies and education, but I work with teens and I see that they're still in high school and they're just pregnant, and I don't see how that really correlates. What do you think on that?
Well, what he's talking about is early education. That is to say, Head Start programs. When you have kids that have preschool education prior to going to kindergarten and K-12, you find that there's a lot lower incidence of teenage pregnancies and stuff like that. So you have to correlate with the early education program, not the fact that those problems still exist in high school.
And I think it's very easy for people our age who have just gone through the usually public education system and are mm-hmm. coming right out into college, right into the real world, to look at the situation as far as education goes and say, this is messed up. Mm-hmm. I know my last 5 years of public school felt completely pointless.
Sure. Well, listen, I mean, the United States, our K-12 system, the best thing you can say about it is that it's very different depending on which district you're talking about. Good districts, bad districts. But our higher education is unsurpassed in the world, and there are good reasons for that. And what we're trying to do is make K-12 a lot better and higher quality, like our higher education. I mean, I've gone to universities all over the world. United States is unsurpassed.
When looking at his speech, talking about young education, the biggest topic, of course, was the Newtown, Connecticut shooting, mm-hmm. the children that were lost in that tragedy there. What were your thoughts on his speech there, where he calls for a vote for everyone, Aurora, Colorado, Gabby Gifford, all those folks? It was one of those speeches that a lot of people were looking at as that was the moment people were going to remember from the State of the Union.
Yeah, no, it was, first of all, as a speech, it was very, very effective. Choice of words and everything. But you understand that politics always responds to events. People look and say, hey, this is an opportunity now for us to do things. We had a ban on assault weapons under Clinton following a similar kind of tragedy in California. So the point is, this is a time when the political process can respond. And what he's doing is he's setting the agenda for this, saying, you got to vote. Because usually these things don't get introduced because no one wants to be seen as either saying, I stand with the NRA or I stand against the NRA. So this is one where the lines have been drawn. And it's going to hurt people if they don't, because no one believes in shooting kids. But on the other hand, everyone believes in the Second Amendment. And that's a really tough one to balance. So what he did is he drew the lines very, very carefully, but in a way that could advantage the Democratic side or the pro-gun regulation side.
I agree with that. I think that does it for us today. We're here with Associate Professor of Political Science, Dennis Patterson. We really want to thank you for coming in today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It was great.
I hope to visit again.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
No, this is my hand right now. Set up a motor. We need more seats. We just sold out all the floor seats. Take me on a trip. I'd like to go someday. Take me to New York. I'd love to see LA.
It's really, really nice to meet ya. I just met this 5'7" guy who's just my type. Like the way he's speaking, his confidence is peaking. Don't like his baggy jeans, but I'ma like what's underneath it. And no, I ain't been to MIA. I heard the Cali never rains, and New York's wide awake. First, let's see the West End. I'll show you to my bedroom. I'm liking this American boy, American boy.
You're listening to the best of Good Morning Texas Tech.
Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech here on KTXT The Raider, 88.1 FM Lubbock. Josh Cook alongside Kira Powell. As J.R. Ginter across the way, also pushing all the buttons to make us sound wonderful this morning. Tweet us at TheRaider881, also on Facebook.com/TheRaider881. We are now joined in the studio by Dr. Ann Rodriguez, as a member of the Public Relations and Advertising faculty here inside the college. And Professor Rodriguez, the biggest thing about the Super Bowl, of course, is the commercials, or are the commercials, rather. When you look at this game, an average of $3.8 million was spent on a 30-second spot. I mean, is it really worth that much to spend that much on a Super Bowl commercial?
Well, a lot of the advertisers seem to feel that it is, and most of the spots were sold out well before the game, unlike some years. So clearly they felt like they were going to get their money's worth. A lot of the same advertisers year in and year out participate, and it's just a part of their media package that they're going to do every year. And then we sometimes have new ones that come in and out, and some local ads that don't cost that big price tag. They don't pay the big price tag right before halftime and right after halftime. There's a big chunk of time for local advertisers, and we had some Suddenlink ad and cars.com, I think. A couple of really local ads though that ran, and they don't pay that kind of money. But still, obviously think it's worth it for them to get that number, the number of audience members that are going to see it.
Now, as a public relations and advertising professor here, what do you think about their approach to these ads? Because there were some last night that maybe pushed an envelope just a little bit, kind of pushing towards the GoDaddy.com.
Which they always do, yeah. Now, there definitely were some that were questionable. I will tell you, one of the most popular ones apparently with the nation and certainly with the viewers of the Super Bowl was the Taco Bell retirees sort of living mas on the running for the border or whatever they wanted to say. But it wasn't popular with the folks that I was with, and they're sort of my age group. So I was surprised. That was a little bit edgy because you don't see, you know, they did something, you don't see older people sort of acting that way normally, and that was the point of it. But certainly GoDaddy was very edgy, and it's always supposed to be. And they had previewed that ad online several days before, so we knew that that it was coming, but they hadn't shown the whole thing, so it was kind of interesting.
Well, our own Kara Powell's put together a commercial montage from last night's game, so Derek, we can take a listen to that.
Cracking Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Cracking Gangnam Style.
You know what always kept America moving forward, America?
Change! We didn't like the shape of chickens, so we changed them to nuggets. We grew tired of saying, greetings, dear friend. So we changed it to, sup. We changed man bands into boy bands. We gotta change that back.
I was just gonna fold your clothes for you so they wouldn't get wrinkled.
That's so sweet of you.
I'd fold your panties any day.
What?
What?
I would do anything for love, but I won't do that or that or this. And no, not this, definitely not this.
What
What the heck's the difference between all these phones?
What's LTE? Is it contagious?
Which one fits my face?
Can I use a dongle with this?
Does it make you uncomfortable when I use the word dongle?
That, son, is where babies come from.
But Jake said babies are made when mommies and daddies...
You go. Play with us on the bus.
The wheels on the bus go round and round.
We got a great fan of the San Francisco 49ers, Paul. Paul, you got some words for the squad?
Yeah. Let's talk about heart and guts.
You're 49ers. You're mining for victory. You're not settlers. Settlers churn butter.
So in conclusion, things are pretty dismal.
You know what this room needs? A smile. Who wanna come with I?
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
You guys are 3 minutes late.
Don't be no cloud on a sunny day.
Yeah, chill, Winston.
Sir?
Respect, boss man.
We'll make you happy.
That's the power of German engineering.
And you know they're funny when you can continuously laugh throughout an entire montage. Back here with Dr. Ann Rodriguez of the College of Media and Communication. I guess out of, you know, we listen back to that montage. I guess, first off, what was your, favorite commercial last time, but the most effective commercial from an advertising standpoint?
Well, it's difficult to say what's most effective. I think that's going to play out over time a little bit. But certainly there were some that were pretty good and very memorable. The Budweiser Clydesdale commercial was quite memorable with the trainer training the baby Clydesdale from an early age. The Tide Joe Montana spot was pretty memorable. I liked the, I know as crazy as it sounds, I liked the pistachio one with the
Gangnam Style.
Yeah. And you know, that just, again, it's so pop culture-y, you know, people are so into it still that it played well, I think. The Taco Bell one again, I think pretty memorable.
The one with the elderly people?
Yes.
Is that the one you're talking
about?
Yeah. That was so random.
See, I didn't really like it, and a lot of people around me didn't really like it, but most of the nation definitely did.
I think it was a lot of uncomfortable giggling when we were sitting.
Maybe that's it, because you're just not, and that was the whole point, though, and people are going to remember it. It's like, what was Taco Bell thinking? But they remember it, and they remember the brand, which is really important for the advertisers.
For a while there, I was confused with that commercial, what it was actually about, because they were just kind of running around gallivanting, so I didn't know what it was about. All of a sudden, they go to Taco Bell, and I was kind of like, and a lot of my friends, you know, I guess between the age of 18 and 24 that we were watching the game, we didn't really like it. We thought it was kind of, this one didn't really work. And then back to the Clydesdale commercial with the, with the horses and Budweiser. You know, it's very hard to sit there in a room of guys and try not to cry when the horse is running towards his trainer.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very hard to not do that.
I love that you had that reaction. That's the exact reaction that Budweiser wants you to have.
Do you feel like when a commercial is more dramatic or more comedic, it's more effective? Which of those two?
It's really hard to say, but for many advertisers, they believe that comedy plays best. And certainly during the Super Bowl, when you've got people in groups, at parties, with alcohol involved sometimes, you know, comedy works and it's infectious. People will say, hey, that's funny, and I think it's funny too, and then they're all of a sudden laughing together. So probably comedy works best, but you have to be careful. It needs to be not just a joke, it needs to be humor, and there's sort of a difference. You know, there's that one-shot joke, but that's not going to last. You need something that's humorous where we'll continue to laugh about it.
Talking about commercials, you know, you go from the spectrum of the funny ones to the emotional ones, and then there were some serious commercials in there as well. You know, we saw, I think maybe for the first time in my recent memory, that we saw such an array of commercials in one Super Bowl, because usually they kind of go for the comedic side. What did you think about the more serious commercials that were involved?
I actually liked some of the serious commercials this time, and some of them were much longer than the traditional 30-second spot as well. Dodge had that Farmers commercial that was quite serious, and then they had the USO,
the Jeep
commercial. One, right, with the Oprah voiceover, which was really pretty effective and quite long. I'm going to guess it was like 2 minutes. It was very long. So, but it captured your attention. It kept you, and a familiar voice helps, you know, and then these very sort of patriotic symbols that you're looking at in graphics and photographs. So I think that was pretty effective. That we were talking about that farmer ad, the Dodge one, and Twitter went crazy with that. There were millions of mentions of farmers immediately upon that ad being on the air. So it clearly was fairly effective.
It was an interesting ad, especially because, you know, I grew up around a farming community and everyone farmed there. And even in West Texas, here with Lubbock, it's a very big farming community. And there were some people, I think maybe, now it's not against anybody from the Metroplex, but there's, you know, students from the Metroplex that were kind of like, well, why are we doing this commercial? And then there was the people from West Texas or the people, folks from a small town that were very touched by that commercial, and I thought it was very well shot. It was very well put together.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was pieced together very well, and it was one of those pieces that I thought was very well. And Marissa Trevino over in the news booth has some comments about the commercials as well.
Now, I can agree that people in the Metroplex don't really get it because I'm from Houston, and I was like, okay, well, when is this going to be over? I don't really want to listen to this. I'm all about the, like, funny commercials. And I was totally not into that farmer's commercial at all.
She had said the funny, she wasn't into the farmer's commercial, just being from Metroplex. She had, she was more into the funny commercials.
Right, right. And a lot of people feel that way. And I think it has a lot to do with sort of where you are and what the environment is that you're watching the game in, too. And again, it's a very social environment, and I think that sometimes affects how you feel about the commercials. Although I honestly think that sometimes if you go back and watch them again, I actually went back and watched Super Bowl for a second time last night and watched just the commercials. And I got a lot more about, I realized a lot more about the commercials. And I think I liked that farmer's commercial much better the second time I saw it.
Now, with commercials like the USO, the Jeep commercial, do you feel like, I had some friends who were really cynical about it, and they didn't like it because they felt like they were kind of manipulating you, playing on your heartstrings
being
a little
preached
bit.
To a little
yes.
bit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How do you think those commercials affect buyers?
For the most part, I think if you look across the board, maybe not with the folks that you were maybe watching the Super Bowl with, but if you look across the board at all the nation, I think it's going to play pretty well. I think, again, it captures a sense of patriotism and maybe even a little bit of guilt that we have to continue to think about these folks in our country that are fighting for our freedoms and all this sort of dramatic stuff that she was saying. But it's pretty effective, and I think the more you listen to the message, the more you probably, if you're not emotionally affected by it, you at least intellectually think, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Of course, always tweet us at the Raider881 on Facebook.com/Raider881 as well. Got some reaction here from actually one of the professors here in the college, Jared Foster, tweeting in. Glad to hear A-Rod on the air. The Oreo the Oreo SM response to Lights Out was the ad winner in my opinion. Big thanks to Jared Foster for listening to Good Morning.
Yes.
Take a little shout out there to Professor Rodriguez as well.
Thank you, Jared. And you know what? That he is absolutely right. That's one of the things I wanted to mention. One of the best parts of the evening and perhaps the most effective thing was when the power went out, there was no commercial spots that were being shown. There were some promotional. There was one commercial break and there were some promotions, CBS promotions, but no commercials. But immediately on the social net in the social network sphere, Oreo came out with an ad that said you can still dunk in the dark, which was great.
Oh,
I mean, so smart.
Wow.
There was one, and Jared, I hope you remember, there was one company that said, we can sell you some LED lights, and I can't remember for the life of me what brand it was, but it was so great about, hey, Mercedes-Benz Superdome, you know, we can sell you some LEDs. What was really funny, though, to me is, you talk about visual communication, the first thing I noticed when the lights went out, every camera shot had that Mercedes-Benz logo that's on the very top of the ceiling in the Superdome, and all you could see was lights out, epic fail of the Super Bowl, and Mercedes-Benz logo right next to it. I thought, that is not good advertising from Mercedes-Benz.
Man, Mercedes-Benz got it last night, because
that was
the one shot they kept showing over and over, because it's the one shot that showed the lights actually
half on, half
going
off,
out,
right.
too.
Yep.
And talk about bad placement of that advertisement.
Yeah, it really was. Unintentional.
And then their commercial, too, like, got a lot of controversy around it with the model in the car wash. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember that one.
I don't
one.
Remember it either. That's terrible. Wow.
I do remember the Jeep one, and one comment I wanted to make about that was my friend actually owns a Jeep, and after the commercial, he said, is it weird that I feel proud to be an American that I own a Jeep now?
No, I think that's fantastic.
And I was like,
it's exactly what they want.
That's exactly
what they want.
But I don't know if, you know, like we talked, I don't know if anyone's running out to a Jeep dealership today and buying themselves a brand new Jeep.
Maybe not, but people might be talking about Jeep, and he might be saying that to a variety of other people. Hey, I feel pretty proud to own a Jeep. And that can just sort of slowly have a trickle effect, and people, maybe the next time they're in the market for a car, Jeep is at least at the top of their mind, and that's what Jeep was hoping for.
Go ahead.
I guess last night, if you have to give maybe a grade overall to the Super Bowl commercials as a whole package, what would you give them?
I was a little bored with them overall. So to me, I don't think it was the best Super Bowl ever for advertising, although there's been sort of a downward trend. So it maybe was the same as last year. I wouldn't say it was necessarily worse, but it certainly wasn't better. Although some of the, if you look at the numbers, some of the best ads in terms of ratings early this morning were the two consumer-generated Doritos ads.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't love them, but a lot of people did, and they were made by fans. They were consumer-generated rather than paid for by Doritos. So that the goat one and the men dancing.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that the goat one was
It was consumer-generated, yeah. And then the men dancing, having the dress-up party with the girl.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty funny.
Well, appreciate your time coming in this morning, talking to us on Good Morning Texas Tech. And, of course, we'll be back right after this break. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech on KTXT The Raider, 88.1 FM Lubbock.
I don't pretend to be an expert on communism or any other kind of politicalism, but you can put me down as being an expert on being a colored American. I know that life in these United States can be mighty tough for people who are a little different from the majority in their skin color or the way they worship their God or the way they spell their names.
I'm certain by now that all of you know of the horrible crime which was committed last night between Selma and Montgomery, Alabama. Arrests were made a few minutes ago after the tragic death of Ms. Val Liuzzo on a lonely road between Selma and Montgomery, Alabama.
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
I, Adam Powell, may belong to a group of people that some others may think are inferior. But I belong to a group of people that God, omniscient, omnipresent God, God of all power, says, you are my children, and you're the same as anyone else.
If, in short, he cannot enjoy the full and free life which all of us want, then who among us would be content to have the color of his skin changed and stand in his place? Who among us would then be content with the counsels of patience and delay?
Democrats have continued to convene once every 4 years and draft a party platform and nominate a presidential candidate. But there is something different about tonight. There is something special about tonight. What is different? What is special? I, Barbara Jordan, am a keynote speaker.
We, of course, are the crew of Spacelab J, STS-47, which, of course, was the 50th flight of the space shuttle. Our mission specialist number 4, Dr. Mae Jemison, making her first flight.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
Hello, Chicago!
Stay tuned for more of the best of KTXT's Good Morning Texas Tech, right here on the Raider 88.1.
Welcome back, Red Raiders. You're listening to Good Morning Texas Tech. Let us know what you think at the Raider 881. I'm here with Josh Cook and our guest, Dr. Carlos Hill. He's from the Texas Department of History. Pull your microphone just a little bit closer. Texas Tech Department of Political History.
Absolutely.
Anyway, you've done quite a bit. I know your dissertation was on resisting lynching. So I think Kiara probably has a few questions for you. Kiara.
I just want to say I'm really excited to have you in studio. And I guess the main topic of this next piece is Black History Month still relevant? And we had a couple students go out, and we'll show you that package here in a minute. But I want to get your thoughts on why it's still relevant and if it is.
Yeah, so we went around. We had one of our students go ask just what people thought about Black History Month, how they felt like it applied to them, and here's some of the responses that we got.
What are your thoughts on Black History Month?
My thoughts on Black History Month? I think that maybe we shouldn't celebrate for a whole month.
Really?
I don't think there's White History Month, or there's not Mexican History Month. There's only Cinco de Mayo and Dieciséis de Septiembre. That's only 2 days. Why do we have to celebrate a whole month? Just out of curiosity. But I think it's nice that we celebrate it. It's a good cause. I personally don't celebrate it. I don't go out and ride in the front of the bus just because it's Black History Month.
Do you think that it's still relevant in today's society?
Yes, it is very. It's very relevant. It's very relevant.
And then you hear a lot of the stuff like, well, how come there's not like a White History Month or something like that? But people don't realize like there are those history months. There's Irish Heritage Month. There's all these different heritage months. And I feel like Black History Month needs to be put a little bit more on campus, a more emphasis on campus.
What are your thoughts on Black History Month?
Well, I think the most important moment in the Black history which has happened in the United States is in Arkansas, Little Rock, where the first African American person was allowed to go to high school in like a long time back. You know, it's all equal. So I celebrate every month with as Black History Month with my friends. I'm a petroleum engineering student, so everybody there is from Nigerian or somewhere, so yeah, they're all my colleagues.
What are your thoughts on Black History Month?
I think it's great, you know, to celebrate a whole month dedicated to Black History Month.
Do you think that is still relevant in today's society?
Yeah, definitely.
Is it important to you?
To me, personally, no.
Do you guys think that Black History Month is still relevant in today's society?
I think it's still relevant. I think that, I mean, times have definitely changed to the point where we don't have as much racism or we don't have as much oppression as we did back in the times. But, I mean, it's still around, and I think it's still important because there's, like, plenty of hate crimes that still go on. So I think it's important that we still just kind of reiterate it as much as we can so that people can know that, you know.
I think his last comment is kind of the one that I tend to agree with the most out of all of those. There were some answers that we got either off the record or that were just so ridiculous. I didn't put them in the mix. So obviously we got some mixed reviews. Some people said, yeah, it doesn't apply to me, but I still think it's necessary. And then some people didn't see the reason for it. And other people said, yeah, it's extremely important. So is that the typical response you normally get?
I think you always get a mixed response, but the thing that people have to keep in mind always is that Black history is American history. Although the Black is emphasized, Black history is the history of slavery. It's the history of the Civil Rights Movement. This is all American history. And so to the extent that people say Black history isn't relevant, they're saying American history isn't relevant. And I, you know, I agree, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, a month. It should be 365 days.
It's just like all other history.
I celebrate Black History Month 365 mm-hmm. days a year, but I'm a historian. I'm an African-American historian. This is my job. But yeah, it's as relevant as it was when it was initially conceived. You know, Carter G. Woodson, the great African-American historian, he developed African-American History Week mm-hmm. in February 1926, and he chose the second week of February in order to honor Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, but also George Washington, presidents that he, in his opinion, played a tremendous role in African-American history. And so Carter G. Woodson, the great African-American historian, chose the second week. 1976, Congress decides that it should be more than a week. And in 1976, Congress passes an act, designating February Black History Month. And so in 2016, it'll be the 50th anniversary of African American History Month. And so it's definitely relevant because it's a moment of reflection, but it's also a moment for truth telling. And as you were saying earlier, there has been progress, right? There's still a long way to go, right? A short, long answer, but it's definitely still relevant.
Does it surprise you that we sit here in 2013 and there's still responses like the ones we heard?
It's disturbing. I mean, one of the things that African American history is supposed to do, it's supposed to educate people, right? And it's supposed to enlighten them about the contributions that African Americans made. And so it's really disheartening when you hear those kinds of responses. Why can't it be just one day? It's really disheartening. But at the same time, that shows that the necessity for having it, right? And so I would be lying to you if I said it didn't matter. It hurts. It's disheartening.
What's your opinion or thoughts on the, I guess, Texas education specifically and their job of educating people on Black history? Because I remember in high school there wasn't a lot of it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really followed so much what happens in the Texas primary schools, secondary schools, but I do know a couple of years ago there was tremendous resistance to certain aspects of American history being included in textbooks. So Thomas Jefferson's, I think one of the controversies was whether or not to include information about the founding fathers' religious beliefs, right? Some on the Texas Board of Education believe that shouldn't be included. And so I think when you have essentially politicians deciding, you know, or trying to edit and sanitize aspects of history, you typically get into trouble. I can't answer your question more directly because, again, I haven't really paid really close attention to what's happening on the state level in terms of history education.
Well, Dr. Hill, we appreciate the time this morning for you coming in studio and speaking with us. If you missed this interview at all, you can catch it later on the Raider881.com. Once again, Dr. Hill, thank you for coming in studio with us.
No problem.
And we look forward to having contact with you in the future.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right. Good Morning Texas Tech. We'll be back after this. We have Baron Batch in studio.
We couldn't quite make it back from spring break, so here's some clips of the best moments of Good Morning Texas Tech, right here on the Raider 88.1.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel Air.
I just had a flashback to my childhood, which was awesome. Now I'm going to go home and watch Fresh Prince. Welcome back to Good Morning Texas Tech here on KTXT, the Raider 88.1. Josh Cook alongside Kara Powell, Marissa Trivio, Julie Fisher. And across the desk we have
Carlton Banks here.
Impersonating Carlton Banks is Baron Batch, former Texas Tech running back, current Pittsburgh Steelers running back. Baron, thank you so much for coming in studio. I know you're...
I've got a quick question. Can you do the Carlton dance? Can you show us that later?
There's not enough room in here to do it.
Okay, we'll
somebody
do it later.
Okay.
Okay.
But today's show, we are talking about Black History Month. And earlier, actually last night, we had some students put together kind of a montage of some famous quotes and moments from sports in the last 50, 60 years.
After the fanfares of the Olympic opening comes the most amazing performance by America's black streak Jesse Owens in the 100 meters. The world's most superb runner makes the others look as if they're walking as he wins the final and equals the world's record time. This and his later victory in the long jump may well be the athletic performances of the century.
Surrett throws back to Schwedis. Gerhardt throws to Davis, and this is the way you make a touchdown. A new Cotton Bowl record for 87 yards.
After Hodges bounces out, Jackie Robinson slams a triple to left center, and the fans will never forget the sight of Jackie Robinson preparing for the plate on his daring steal.
You saw all the white people, the critics, the world, had me ranked to go down. This was that man, and Allah, God was with me, and this man looked like nothing.
Right.
I want you to remember that. What? Want to know where I get the power? Visit the local Muslim mosque. Read that Muhammad Speaks newspaper.
Right.
Take it from me. I'm going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. His hands can't hit what his eyes can't see.
He's sitting on 714. Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 715. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
Jordan goes up with a shot and hits it and has 61 points to tie Elgin Baylor's all-time single-game playoff record. Jordan with 8 on the clock. Jordan ties the game.
Oh, boy.
63 points, and you're looking at an all-time record.
All right, it's win or lose. Game 6 for the Bulls. 10 seconds. And with it, of course, the championship. Jordan, 20-footer, head of the key. Good! Chicago by 1. And the Utah Jazz take time. Chicago is world champions once more. The Chicago Bulls have won their 6th NBA championship in the last 8 years.
Back into Good Morning Texas Tech. Derek Ginter across the way helping me out there. Getting my mic on. In studio with Baron Batch. Baron, we listened to a few clips there. You had Jordan, you had Hank Aaron, you had Jackie Robinson in there. In sports, you know, I'm a sports journalist, and it's kind of the most interesting thing looking back in history. What are your thoughts when you look back on history and kind of you think of the Jackie Robinsons, you think of the Ernie Davises that played college football, played running back, the position you play. What does it mean to you to play now and know what they went through so many years ago?
Yeah, I think it's important to, I think that's one huge part of Black History Month is, you know, black sports history. And just like Dr. Hill said, just it's American history. And for me, being a professional athlete, those guys paved the way for me. And sometimes you don't necessarily remember that, and it kind of gets lost in the mix of just all the sports. And now it's normal to see black players on the court or on the field or on the track or wherever that may be. But that's not how it used to be. You know, it took certain players to endure through what was a change of just mindsets and process. So, you know, it's something that I'm thankful for.
When you hear those clips and you think about what they went through, I mean, I guess when you were growing up and you were playing sports, did you ever experience any kind of, issues with being a black athlete? Did you ever experience any trouble from anybody, or was it pretty much they kind of didn't do anything?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. There was this one time they were just like, Baron, you're just so fast that no one can catch you, and that became an issue. I'm just kidding.
Okay. You nearly shocked me.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. No, you know, when I was growing up, it's one of those things that it's a sign of progress. You know, you get to the point where your face.
My face is priceless.
No, it's one of those things that it makes you thankful. You know, when you ask me that question, mm-hmm. and I look back and I think back on it, and that's not something that I necessarily had to deal with. And it's because someone else dealt with it already, you know, and you know, just because I didn't deal with it doesn't mean that many other people haven't and still don't. You know, I was thankful that I grew up, you know, for the most part in a community that accepted me, and, mm-hmm. and that wasn't necessarily an issue.
We grew up in Midland. Baron is also from Midland, and that's where I grew up. What's the biggest difference between Texas and being in Pittsburgh now?
Definitely. I'd probably say the people, you know, it's just kind of different culture. Everything moves a little bit faster. You know, I come back here and, everybody will stop and, you know, chat, and it's, I don't want to say everybody's nicer down here, but they're kind of nicer down here. It's just, you know, West Texas is full of great people, you know, and it's dusty and brown and not much to look at. But, you know, the best people in the world live here, and I've traveled a lot, and I'll stand by that.
What's it like when you do come back here and you remember playing college football here, and now you're in the professional, at the professional level? Does it make you appreciate Lubbock a little more now? Because there are some people that when they come to Lubbock, they're like, oh, it's just the middle of nowhere, all that stuff. But do you appreciate it for being your start, where you started playing college football and now you're in the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love Lubbock. I love my hometown of Midland. I love just the area in general of West Texas. You know, that's it's where I lived, you know, my whole life before, you know, I left and moved to Pittsburgh. And, you know, I have so many memories here, you know, just driving on campus. And, you know, I was up at the football facility the other day, and just, you know, it's part of me. It's something that, you know, it's instilled values, morals, and things that, you know, I'll take, you know, with me through the rest of my life.
Coach Kingsbury was hired back in December. I understand you got to meet him mm-hmm. yesterday. What was that like, getting to meet the new head coach of Tech football?
It was awesome. You know, Coach Kingsbury and I, it's kind of been, you know, he's known me and I've known him, but we've never actually met. So it was nice to just sit down with him and chat. And, you know, I'm excited about, you know, everything that's coming up and on the horizon for Tech football. And it's just, it's really cool to come back. And I remember when I first got here, I guess it would have been the east side of the stadium wasn't built. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and when Coach Kingsbury was here, you know, there was a lot of work that wasn't even done on the other side of the stadium. So now both sides of the stadium are kind of done. Now they're building the Jumbotron. So it's kind of just cool to be able to see, you know, the work that both of us have put in over the years, just accumulate into the building of, you know, a program.
How excited are you to see that new video board starting to get worked on that? I mean, as a player, because you've been in NFL stadiums where you've seen the big video boards, you've been in Cowboys Stadium where they have the monster video board. Yeah. Does it affect the players at all during a game with the video board or anything, or do y'all just kind of just focus on the field?
I mean, as a player, you definitely just focus on, you know, what mm-hmm. you know, the task at hand, and that's winning a football game. But at the same time, I mean, it's something to be proud of. It's something that, you know, as a former player, I understand that that's fruit of the work that I put in, you know, the 5 years I was here. And the kids that are here now are going to realize they're going to put in their work, and they're going to come back and see some things that have grown and been built, and they're going to be proud of it.
Well, Baron, we appreciate the time. Appreciate yep. you coming in here and talking with us, and good luck this next NFL season.
Yep, thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll be back with Good Morning Texas Tech right after this.
You've been listening to the best moments of Good Morning Texas Tech here on the Raider 88.1. For comments, questions, or just for some ideas for upcoming shows, visit the Raider 881 on Facebook, tweet us at the Raider 881, or get on our website at ktxtfm.org. Thanks for listening. Now here's Undercurrents.